Welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carlin, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases. Dr. Rebecca Carlin.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BBS Radio, its staff or management, and represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced disease syndromes, please go to www.drcarly.com and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I went from being a surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. I do consults for people with autoimmune diseases and cancer to teach people how to reverse these problems with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and do everything based on your history alone. I do not need to see you in person. Please call me at the number on my website if you would like to learn how I do consults. I ask you to consider the information I give using your own God-given common sense detector and discern the truth for yourself. I love to answer your questions, so please feel free to call in toll-free at 877-270-8714. It is fine if you use only your first name, and all shows are archived. Every week I will answer the question, what is ailing America, with a different response, as well as share the good news of what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet, for awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware that inoculations are the true weapons of mass destruction, together we will be able to stop this holocaust on the health of people and pets. For the next stage to human evolution is to take responsibility for our lives and the lives of those in our care. If you don't stand up for the truth, you will fall for any lies. And it's very important for us to start living in a sacred way and stand up to those who want to force their pharmaceuticals on our holy temples. I would like to thank my client Gloria, who has designed two wonderful bumper stickers that you can now access a link on my website to order them. I do not make any money off these bumper stickers, but it's just a very convenient way for people to order them. And if you go to my website, you'll now see that new link. And I encourage all of you to order a bumper sticker and put it on your car so that as you're driving around, you can start to wake up those who are behind you in traffic. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about What's Ailing America, the Over-Vaccination of Pets, Part 2, because as it turns out, last week, for the first time in BBS Radio's history, our stream was cut by outside forces. And the reason for that is because my guest is my counterpart in the veterinary world, a very important veterinarian by the name of Dr. Patricia Jordan, and I'm going to be giving you a little bit of her background in a minute. But before I bring her on, I just want to let you all know some new information I just received. Fraudulent Drug Administration, their guidance on the CAM regulation, the complementary medicine regulation. I just received an email today that's going into some more details about what they want to do. And as it turns out, the Fraudulent Drug Administration's guidelines defines CAM as complementary and alternative medicine, not modalities or medicines, so that any CAM modality or any sort of healing technologies such as energy, nutrition, massage, acupuncture, homeopathy, etc., is going to become a physicians-only activity. And, of course, licensed physicians who carry out these treatments instead of following practice algorithms, which means drugs, could face disciplinary action, including the loss of their licenses and FDA raids by armed marshals and dogs on their offices. Now, as it turns out, if you go to my website and listen to the show that I did on the New York State Medical Board fraud, which talks about how the New York State Medical Board took away my license to practice medicine, saying I have a delusion of conspiracy, and there's a lot of fraud in that case, I had decided to attempt to get my license to practice down here in North Carolina just, you know, in preparation for the days to come. And I just want to let you all know that, as it turns out, as for the North Carolina Medical License Board, and I'm going to write a quote for you from their actual, Medical Practice Act, Chapter 90, which states under Section 90-14, revocation, suspension, annulment, or denial of license. Number 9, this is what it says. A physician's license can be revoked, or also a new physician that moves into the state. Say a physician lives out of state and they decide to come to North Carolina and they want to apply for a North Carolina medical license. They will have their request denied if they have advertised or publicly professed to treat human ailments under a system or school of treatment or practice other than that for which the physician has been educated. Now, of course, I was trained as a surgeon. There is no medical education for vaccine-induced diseases. The medical mafia does not even admit that such a specialty exists. And what I tell people, what I have realized, is that the entire practice of internal medicine is actually vaccine-induced diseases. So I want you to know how much they're doing behind the scenes to make sure that doctors who want to help you, those who have a conscience and have a backbone and care more about their clients than their pocketbooks, this is what they're doing, folks, and they're going to make it so that these natural ways of healing are considered a practice of medicine and take away the licenses of doctors who do so. So it's up to you, the people, to do something about this, because I can assure you that I know what to do for myself. I'm not going to be affected by this health-wise. Of course, as far as my work, that's going to be a major problem. But if those of you listening want people such as myself and Dr. Jordan, who I'm going to bring up now, to be able to help you and your pets stay healthy and to advocate for you and to stop this insanity of inoculations, we need you to do something, and it's up to you all to decide what you're going to do, even if it's only to tell others about these broadcasts, about the information that we're going to share with you tonight. It's up to you to take a role, because silence is consent, and if you do nothing, then the powers that be are going to create a world in which not only do they create disease, but they decide what you can do in order to heal yourself. From what I understand from these CAM regulations, even a Pilates ball, these round rubber balls that people exercise on, even that is going to be deemed a medical device. So this is how bad it is, folks, and it's really important for you to get involved, as I said. And also, I just want to mention one other thing. I had talked last week, Dr. Jordan shared with me a document that this veterinarian, Bob Rogers from Texas, had written to the Office of the Attorney General, where he's actually suing the state of Texas over the licensed veterinarians that are over-vaccinating pets in that state and making them very sick. I just want to let you know that that document is now on the bottom of my homepage at drcarly.com, and I encourage you to go to my website and read that document. Because one thing that I've realized from the hundreds and hundreds of emails that Dr. Jordan has been sending me is that there are many veterinarians with a conscience. Forget the medical doctors, the white coats. They are filled with fear. They are too greedy, whatever the case may be. They are doing absolutely nothing to advocate for you. It's the chiropractors, the naturopaths, the veterinarians. These are the people that are trying to help you, and we need the people. We need a grassroots effort to spread the word about this inoculation holocaust, because once we reach critical mass, there's going to be an evolution of consciousness, and people are going to start to realize that it's better to be exposed to a bug naturally, have it coughed on you or sneezed on you, rather than have it injected directly into your bloodstream in multiple doses with multiple different bugs, of course, combined with all kinds of toxic chemicals. So, on that note, I would like to bring on my guest, and I'm so happy to have her on again. Her name is Dr. Patricia Monahan-Jordan, DVM, CVA, CTCVH, and she's also a specialist in herbology. And I'll let her give you the definition of those terms. I sent out her bio in a blast. It's too lengthy to read, actually. She's had so many awards and honors, Dean's List, American Association of Women's Veterinarian Scholarships. She's been in honors programs, Who's Who in American Colleges and Universities, National Merit Scholarship recipient, Outstanding Service Award, all kinds of different scholarships. She's worked for the Mafia as well. As a matter of fact, in 1986, she worked for Glaxo Pharmaceutical Company and was the microbiologist in charge of quality control testing of pharmaceutical products. But just like myself, Dr. Jordan started down a certain road and ended up in a place she never dreamed she would be, where she realized that her profession had been totally corrupted and was now actually being used to create disease. And then, of course, they have the drugs to treat the disease and manage the disease, but nothing ever happens to cure the individual or the pet. So I would like to thank you so much, Dr. Jordan, for being on the show again. I know you had to forego another a meeting you were supposed to go to be on tonight, but I especially wanted you on tonight because starting in June, there's going to be another show following mine, so it was very important for you to be on tonight so we could have some extra time to go over if we have to, because this is such a very important subject. So welcome to the show.
Well, I'm happy to be here. If we even save, you know, two pets, I'm happy, and two pets owners will tell two others, and pretty soon it'll just be non-acceptable from the consumer to accept the overuse of vaccinations in their pets. And I just want to try to set the record straight for what's been, advocated from our American Veterinary Medical Association and AHA and the AAFP, and to encourage all listeners who own pets to stand up when they go in, they get that yearly reminder card, to stand up to the veterinarians that are requesting that they get these various vaccines every single year, way too intensive of a protocol under any circumstances, and to get some answers to their questions.
Could you just give us the definitions for some of those abbreviations, starting with CVA? What's CVA?
My training, I have almost finished my master's in traditional Chinese veterinary medicine, which is just one of the modalities I went into looking for a better way to treat animals. Following my doctor of veterinary medicine and 15 years of practice, I realized we were hitting too many dead ends in allopathic medicine, and I always would come to these same dead ends. I could actually start to see them, and I was like, no, I'm not going down that road, because we weren't getting cures. So I set off on a path of through the AHVMA, which is the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association, and became trained in homeopathy under Dr. Pitcairn's professional course. The CVA is part of the training that I received at Qi Institute in Redding, Florida, under Dr. Shea, and that's a certified veterinary acupuncturist. And then the CTCVM is the certification in traditional Chinese veterinary medicine, and herbology is just one. And I also have certification in Tuina, which is soft tissue manipulation. I attended classes at Healing Oasis for their spinal manipulation, pulse diagnosis, and homotoxicology, and just a lot of other variant ways of approaching natural medicine that there's not even certification courses out there yet for.
Yes.
So.
And what about this AHA? What about this AHA? What are the corollaries to the AMA and the American Pediatrics Association and all these other alphabet agencies for people? What are the corollaries for pets?
Okay, the three main organizations that have come out with the new recommendations for the vaccines, the AVMA is the American Veterinary Medical Association, of which I'm a member and I have been for 20 years. The second one, AHA, is the American Animal Hospital Association, and the AAFP, of which I was a member for when I had my feline clinic, but it's the American Association of Feline Practitioners. And the talk I was supposed to attend to tonight was with Dr. Alice Wolf, who Mariel, one of the vaccine companies, one of the better ones that are out there trying to make at least a cleaner vaccine, had her sponsored talk to discuss this very thing of the new three-year recommendations. And I stress that they're recommendations, not...
And that's for rabies,
three-year.
Right? That's for rabies?
That is for what they call the core vaccines. Essentially, in dogs, it's the distemper, parvo, and adenovirus, and rabies. And then the core for the cats would be the feline distemper, rhinotracheitis, calicivirus, and rabies. Those are considered the what we call core. That means the ones that you need to really still be concerned about across the board. Cats that live indoors may not even need, you know, all of that, but depending on the state, the rabies is, you know, mandated by the individual state laws. So
that's what I want to clarify. That's what I want to clarify to the listeners. Under the law, isn't the rabies the only one that's required by law for either feline or canine companion?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
It's only rabies that has any kind of public law significance at all.
Thank you. And I will tell people what I would do if I was you. I would only get the rabies if I got anything, and I would get it certainly only every 3 years rather than every year as they recommend because, of course, as the documents on my website explain to you, they're inoculating you with disease. And I think you're much better off taking your chance out there in the world, out there in nature, as to being exposed to these different organisms, feeding yourself and your pets healthy food, of course, so that your body is in a good shape. And your body's immune system is going to be able to handle whatever. But that's very important because when you mentioned that word, a clean vaccine, you should see me with my Cheshire grin. The idea of a clean vaccine is a joke to begin with. And I always tell people to ask their white coats, if you're telling me to remove standing water from my property so that I won't have a mosquito problem because, you know, those big bad mosquitoes are going to sting me with their proboscis and inject me with some virus that's going to give me encephalitis, and I'm supposed to be scared of that. What's the difference between that and the white coat coming after a child or a pet with a vaccination? What is the difference? The only difference is, of course, that there's many more viruses in a syringe than there is in a tiny little mosquito, and then, of course, you have all the additives as well.
Yes, the one company that I dealt with, the distemper vaccine for cats, has an offering, what I consider, I don't know if you'd want to use the word clean or better, but the vaccine for the distemper is a trivalent, which means it covers three things, and it is an intraocular, intranasal vaccine. It's just drops that you put on the surface of the eye so that it's more like a natural exposure in that the cell-mediated immunity would be developed. They would develop IgA on the mucosal surfaces, which is where they would catch that. And there are indications for its use in multiple cat situations. I've even used that vaccine in chronically snarkly cats that had upper respiratory. It actually improves their cell-mediated immunity. So, you know, there's so much about vaccinology that you couldn't even cover in an hour lecture. But Mariel is one of the first companies that went to the Timmersol-free vaccine, of which there's so many clinics that don't even, and people don't even know, they can actually, when they have to have the rabies, they can, request that it only be given a Timmersol-free, which means they can give a mercury-free rabies vaccine, and Mariel is one of the companies that makes that. So the whole fact Mariel also was the first one that brought Dr. Ford around to tell me about the fibrosarcomas in cats, the cancer. And to their benefit, they quickly took back all of the vaccine that they had when they had developed the one that was attenuated to a canary pox and was is called PureVax for cats. So, I mean, you know, everybody's evil as far as the vaccine industry is concerned. You do have some companies that are at least, I think, attempting to make what I consider a cleaner or more in-line vaccine with what we have to have. There's some interesting information on the
I just want to mention that's very important what you said. I wasn't even aware that there were vaccines for pets that did not have to be injected. So, see, you're giving people very important information just by telling them that, and I'm sure that their veterinarians don't tell them that when they take their pets in. They just take out the syringes and start the injections. So that in itself is very important information, and I totally agree with you. The fact that they recalled vaccines that they knew were causing a problem, you know, that definitely shows a conscience. So that is a very good sign. And the thimerosal-free, of course, is very important as well.
Right. So I do think I have to, you know, my hats are off to the companies like Heska, who they're based in Colorado, and they make the intraocular intranasal vaccine for cats, and it was picked up this year as one of the recommended vaccines by the American Association of Feline Practitioners. And then also the Mariel company because of making the Temersal-free rabies vaccines. And Mariel also makes the PureVax rabies vaccine for cats, which is, as I said, they use a canary pox, and they don't have, you know, I didn't see vaccine reactions with it. They're working on trying to get it to be labeled for more than 1 year's use, so that's hopeful. I was sort of disappointed to see that they still have to give that vaccine every year. But the alternative is to use the killed vaccines. And the information that Alice Wilson and Richard Ford had out recently, which I think is very good synopsis of how the problem in cats developed, and what they reported was it was about 1985, which would have been a year before I graduated from veterinary school, that they quit using the modified live rabies vaccine that was available at that time for dogs and cats. And although I'm still trying to track it down, the modified live rabies vaccines have had a problem with safety issues and also stimulating enough immunity. So you have both sides of a bad vaccine there. But they developed a killed vaccine, and about that time they also came out with the first leukemia virus vaccine for cats, which was killed. And about that time they started mandating cats receive the rabies vaccines as well. And, of course, with it, the rabies vaccine only being killed, that meant that two major vaccines that came out that year for cats was they were killed, which means they killed form has adjuvants in it. And usually the adjuvant is aluminum hydroxide. And it was after they, only after 2 years of starting with those two killed vaccines that I believe the first reports were coming through the University of Illinois and the University of Pennsylvania. Somebody on staff there, they started noticing vaccine area inflammation sites. And it was only, you know, by the end of the 1980s that they were seeing the fibrosarcomas show up in the cats. They were sort of our sentinels for what happens when we use the killed vaccines and the adjuvants in those sites. So there was definitely cancer that's reported from that. I would say that the other thing is, as a general rule, we did not get any vaccinology in school. I mean, I talk to colleagues all the time, and I've been out 21 years, and I've talked to colleagues out 40 years. I've talked about 10. Nobody's receiving information. I had forwarded to you two textbooks. One is Dr. Schultz's. It's like a $200 textbook on veterinary vaccinology I didn't even know existed. And there was another one that I had sent that it's also around $200. But it was about the history of the vaccine development, and I'm sure that that has a lot of information in it that you carry on your website that shows that these are not innocuous substances that we're injecting. And I would put it out there as a challenge to all my veterinary colleagues, because I have yet to see a practice. And I went for a whole year just interviewing a lot of different practices, trying to find a job where I could be happy with the philosophy of, you know, the members who owned the practice on what they were doing to animals. And there's hardly anybody that has the MSDS sheets on these vaccines that they're using. They use them interchangeably. They use them against FDA regulations, which says clearly that only healthy animals need to be vaccinated. And they're assuming and shouldering this liability without giving the owner any kind of informed consent or full disclosure. And that's my point, is that I see vaccines, like, for instance, one of them that we use almost exclusively in the dogs is by, it's Vanguard, L4CV by Pfizer, and it has three modified live vaccines in it. And we know that the modified live vaccines, particularly the parvo vaccine, from the work that Jean Dodds did, actually when she was working in the human science field, but on animal vaccines, that the parvovirus definitely causes immunosuppression. And then in there, they're linking four different serovars from the Lepto, which is a killed Bactrin vaccine, and they're putting a killed coronavirus. And anytime you put the killeds in, you have to have a lot of aluminum hydroxide adjuvant, and there's also mercury. And that's just, to me, it's a sin. I mean, they're giving that on one side of the dog, and then they're giving on the other side the 3 years killed vaccine for rabies, sometimes every single year. And there is no requirement that the dogs have a distemper vaccine every single year. Even the one doctor who's done the most work, I feel like, on immunology and vaccinology would be Dr. Ron Schultz. And his own dogs, he advocates only at 15 weeks of age, one vaccine that he has, I guess it's a trivalent, it's the parvovirus, adenovirus, and distemper. And he never vaccinates his own dogs for the rest of their life. So just the one at 15 weeks. They do need to develop a parvo vaccine, I believe, that's more like the distemper vaccine for the cats, which is an intraocular, intranasal, or some kind of like by-mouth vaccine, sort of like our polio vaccine was on the sugar cube, and I think that would work better because it would develop the cell-mediated immunity. And even there's been one very forward researcher that has said that the best way to vaccinate a litter of puppies is to vaccinate, you know, one or two of them and let their poop, because they'll shed the parvovirus for like 2 weeks afterwards, inoculate the rest of the litter. However, there's just no way to really track that transfer of immunity, you know, within the puppies.
I must comment on that, because first of all, I don't know how long it takes for a puppy's immune system to develop. I from what I understand, you don't even want to wean a puppy until about 8 weeks. In a child, it's 6 months. The idea of inoculating a puppy or a child before they're weaned from their mother's milk, to me, is totally insane to begin with, because their immune system hasn't even developed enough to respond to the vaccinations. But I will say that, in my opinion, it's insane to do it at all, because if they're going to be exposed to these viruses in the wild, as far as I'm concerned, the best way to protect yourself or your child or your pet would be to give them healthy food and to make their immune system be as functional as possible. And why do you have to inoculate them with diseases? Why can't you wait until their bodies are exposed to it naturally, and then they're going to develop their cell-mediated immunity at that point? Why do you have to inoculate them to begin with?
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, it's just the allopathic way of training never gave veterinarians any information on the use of homeopathy to treat, you know, like the acute symptoms of a disease, which is what the way I would handle it.
Right.
And even, and like you said, nutrition is very important. That's the other very lacking science taught to any of the veterinarians that I've come across. And even when I see book reviews written by veterinarians, it's just, there's just a lot to be desired on the knowledge that they need to impart upon veterinarians about nutrition. And part of that problem is the fact that I don't think anybody has it. You know, I mean, there's nobody that has really good nutritional work out there and that I know of. And there's no long-term studies. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with just the simple fact of reality and getting long-term studies together. But I think that from the dogs that I've seen that were naturally reared, they're a much superior animal. They have much better, I would say, genetics that were less likely to have transmutations from the overuse of vaccination and from the feeding of completely, I don't even know what the word to use for it, because I'm so, right now I'm just really still very, very hostile towards the commercial pet food industry. And
well, basically
that,
it's,
you know,
garbage. It's,
yes,
garbage,
it is.
Right? And isn't
I've heard somebody else referred to it as landfill. Landfill, right.
Right, but isn't it also true that those pet food companies, I'm sure they do the same things for the veterinary students that the pharmaceutical companies do for the medical students. Don't they give you, you know, little gifts and things of that nature and free food when you start your practice? And there's all kinds of incentives like that for you to push their products.
Yes, that is true. And as a matter of fact, the only the clinical nutrition book that I had was given to us and by the main, the only sole source at that time. And, you know, when you go through the veterinary hospitals and the teaching hospitals and they're dealing with food that they got for free from this company without even explaining the situation to you, you come through there as a student thinking this is the gold standard. And then I'm fully aware that at the national, you know, conferences, they're usually the ones that are sponsoring the open bars and the free food and all sorts of giveaways. They have rebate programs, and then it's just like the human field, exactly. I mean, it's not just the food companies that are doing that. It's the people who produce the heart guard and or the heartworm prevention, and also the same people that are that'll link a couple of their products together. But, I mean, that's just the way it is. However, what we didn't know as students, that it's not the only way it can be. They get this false sense of security, and then when they set up their hospitals, yes, they do get big kickback programs, and they know what they're doing. The companies are great marketers, and that's what you don't find out until later after you've been in the field for a while, is that that's what it was, is marketing. All along it was marketing. It wasn't necessarily the right thing to do, and it wasn't necessarily and actually probably even rarely ever based on any kind of real science. Conflict science, but not real science.
And
Dr.
another
Carly?
Thing I just want to comment on that you mentioned, just to underline it and put it in a bold font, is this idea that if your pet is sick, they're not supposed to be vaccinated. Because I hear from my clients all the time that bring their children into the pediatrician, and it doesn't matter if they've almost got walking pneumonia. The pediatrician will say that's fine because they're afraid that if they don't vaccinate them then, that the parents aren't going to bring them back. And, of course, one of the problems that we're encountering today with both children and pets and adults as well, is that there's very few healthy individuals or pets out there, so the veterinarians don't even recognize healthy pets. If they've got pets coming in all day long, they've got runny eyes and all kinds of other symptoms, if they've got some kind of chronic infection, they don't think anything about it. And as you were discussing last week about that dog that was brought in that was having shortness of breath and all of these other symptoms, that he was really having some severe problems, and the veterinarian thought nothing about whipping out the hypodermic and giving him the injections, and the client had to bring the pet home and where the pet died and then brought the dead pet back. And so this is something that people also have to realize. If your pet is sick or your child is sick and you bring them to the pediatrician because they're sick and they suggest that you get the child or the pet vaccinated at that visit, you should be looking for another health care provider, in my opinion, because that person obviously has no clue.
Right, and this is the problem in veterinary medicine. It is, because I've done tallies on certain days. 98% of the animals that received injections should not have received injections, and that is the problem. I mean, we know that there's autoimmune problems, and I would say probably most of our hyperthyroid cats and most of our hypothyroid dogs are immune-mediated issues, that the whole reason they have their endocrine disease is because of overuse of vaccination. And the types of vaccines that are being used, now that they have more studies out about the autoantibodies that are produced, now that we know more, and it's mainly from animal studies, even though it's reported through the human field, about what's happening with the mercury, what's happening with the aluminum hydroxide, the adjuvants, all of those poisons, and then in combination with poor feeding practices, are creating essentially unhealthy animals. And so none of them should be getting vaccinated. And yet, you know, you have animals in here that are so allergic, and they're on prednisolone, and they're on Suloxone for their thyroids, they're on Benadryl, and they're still itchy, and yet they come through there, and they go ahead and run them through like a cattle call practice and pop them full of shots. And people don't realize that these vaccines, first of all, there's no law requiring that they have them. And number two, that there is something on there that says directly on that label, shouldering the liability or the responsibility is the veterinarian that's administering that, it's inoculating that into their dog. If I hear one more case, in this last 4 weeks, I have heard of over 100 cases from different people that told me that their dogs, most of them in different stages of health, nobody in good health, because it doesn't take very long for them to get in bad health with this overintensive vaccination process, but that they died after getting a three-year rabies shot, like within hours. There's a correlation.
Dr. Carley?
There. Yes.
Dr. Carley?
Yes.
Hi, this is Donna from Florida.
Hi, Donna.
I wanted to ask a question when you have a minute.
Yeah, go ahead, ask the question.
Okay, because this is along those lines. I have a 7-year-old boxer, and she was at 8 weeks old diagnosed with Demodex mange on her first visit to the vet. And she had a severe reaction, like within 2-3 days, or actually the same day that she had the Bordetella vaccine. And, you know, she already had an immune problem. Her face, like, swelled up like, I mean, she looked like an elephant dog. I have some horrific pictures of her from when she was a puppy. And every year that I would bring her back, she would get that vaccine and she would have the same reaction. So after listening to your show last week, just coincidentally on Friday, my dog was having a problem, so I just brought her in to have them check her out. And I asked the vet, you know, what were the things that I could do since she had this, you know, this reaction. And the vet told me that, you know, the rabies vaccine that she got was a 3-year shot, so I wouldn't have to worry about that. But for the Bordetella, that she could do, like, a titer test, but it would cost me $300. And
I haven't actually heard of the titer test being done for Bordetella, but Bordetella is a very short-lived immunity with that vaccine. There's two forms of it available, the intranasal spray, sort of like the flu shot that's going around for people. You know, they spray it up their nose.
Flumin,
and the other one,
right?
And the other one that's injected. But, you know, I have a good friend that has a very large kennel, and the only time they have, you know, Bordetella problems in there is with the vaccinates, because the spray will put up a live culture on their throat. I wouldn't get it. And if this is going to be something that's going to be mandated by what I consider very ignorant boarding facilities and very ignorant, you know, veterinary hospitals. In my hospital, I quit requiring the vaccinations, and I boarded a lot of cats in a small space, and we never had problems with anybody breaking with something. Now, mind you, this was 6 years ago when I first found out that the vaccines weren't required, but I would go find somebody that would watch your dog at your house or somewhere to avoid that, because they don't.
Well,
have to have
and that's the thing. I never boarded her. There's no reason for me to board her. She stays here with us, or I have someone come to the house and take care of her. So, I mean, my question is, how can I bypass these vaccines? Number one, knowing that, you know, obviously the dog has a severe immune problem to begin with. Although I don't have any signs of this Demodex mange anymore, but I'm afraid, you know, now that the county knows that she's here, I just got my blue reminder card, and she's not due for the rabies, but she's due for the other. You know, the other two, the Bordetella and what's that other one, DT?
No, but I don't think there's any way that you could be required to get anything but the rabies. Whatever your state has, if it's a 3-year rabies that she has, then you're not required to get anything.
I'm not required to get those other two?
No, you are not. And if that hospital doesn't open up their eyes to what the recommendations are, we have a 7 to 10 years of immunity from the distemper vaccine, and especially in a case like yours. Your puppy, when it was having Demodex, was already showing an immunosuppression problem, because Demodex is a mite that all dogs have. It's just when they have a problem with their T-cell counts, that's part of their cell-mediated immunity. If they're having a stressed-out situation, or their food, or, you know, just transitioning from where they were raised to the new home, anything can cause them to break with Demodex. In a case like that, I personally would not even have vaccinated the dog at that time.
And right, and that's one of my, you know, obvious issues. It's 7 years ago, but the thing that, you know, frustrates me is that they continue to vaccinate her every year, knowing that she had the situation, and every year, and, you know, they said it was the Bordetella, but I don't know which vaccine caused it, because she got them all three at the same time. Only last year did she get the 3-year rabies. Before that, you know, I was a good soldier giving her, you know, annual rabies and the other two at the same time. I mean, they labeled it as being a reaction to the Bordetella, but I don't know how they even can figure that out, you know, specifically.
Right, and I think that I would be a lot more suspicious that when she was vaccinated and had that reaction, she most likely had a distemper combination vaccine that also had lepto in it, leptospirosis, which is a Bactrin, which there are over 7 serovars. They're not cross-protective, and the biggest anomaly about that vaccine is that it only provides you about 4 months of protection in a case where you're probably not, your puppy's not even likely to come in contact with that. And then, like I said, it's with a combination of vaccines. Honey, there is no way that I would go back to a hospital that was telling you that you had to have all of these every year. If they can't become, do what their Hippocratic Oath says, which is to stay current with current scientific advancement, then you need to find another veterinarian. And
how do you go about finding a vet who would work with someone? This is a good question probably for all the listeners, who would work with you the way you work with someone. I mean, how do you go about finding?
You probably
like
would
you?
Have to do some calling around with a telephone. But just to show you an example, in the town where I was working in North Carolina, there were several AHA certified hospitals. And AHA now has as a recommendation every 3 years. And yet we went back and checked with all those hospitals. They have neon signs going through to keep your animal healthy, vaccinate them every year. Mm-hmm. I consider what those hospitals are doing to be malpractice. And malpractice seems to be the standard of care within any of those practices that are not passing along to you. And really, I think it has to come from the consumer, because I'm very angry that the veterinarians, even though we've had this three-year recommendations, and even though Dr. Schultz and Dr. Ford and everyone says, hey, even though this says 3 years, this does not mean that you have to vaccinate every 3 years. There's no law that requires anyone to do it. They're not even advocating that the veterinarians individually do this. The best practices I see take each case on an individual basis, and they will go now. Most of the dogs are so over-vaccinated, they would simply follow what they had to do because of public law until we can get that changed for the rabies. And they could offer you a titer if you need for whatever purpose to prove to your kennel club, or if you show the dog, or if you're, moving the dog, that the dog has a titer already available to protect him against disease. Or, as a friend of mine, I got a copy from a veterinarian in California. It was it's a certificate of non-vaccination. It looks just like a rabies certificate. But what it's on there is saying this animal has clearly already been hyper-immunized, or has a titer that you can attach to it, or now has one of the vaccine-induced diseases that would preclude it being vaccinated. And, I mean, I hate that it has to come to this, but this is going to have to be information that the pet owner is going to have to stand up to their veterinarian and tell them. If the veterinarian was a good veterinarian, they'd already be giving you this information. They would already be offering you full disclosure. They would already be worried about getting informed consent for inoculating your dogs with mostly what I consider poisons and toxins.
Right. Well, and that's, again, my frustration, because they already knew how sick this dog was to begin with, and for her to say, well, you could do this titer test, but it'll cost you $300, when they obviously know we care about the dog. I mean, when she was first diagnosed with Demodex mange, we spent about $300 a month treating her with pesticides. We had to bathe her in, and she had to drip dry in a cage, and I was pregnant at the time. I could not even get near the dog for 2 days after that treatment. And then she was given heartworm pills on a daily basis, a monthly heartworm pill that was for a 100-pound dog, and she was like, 9 or 10 pounds? So it's not like it wasn't an issue of money for us. Why didn't they ever bring that up over the 7 years that they treated the dog? It's, to me, an outrage. I'm really
Well, I think it is an outrage, and unfortunately what that problem is, that's why I left strictly allopathic medicine and went looking for other ways. For a consideration of the Demodex problem, there is a very inexpensive plant sterol that's a fat. It's in a product that's available to many people. It's called Magicare at the health food stores. That has shown, there's even a place you can send the dog's blood to show the raise in CD4 counts, which is your T cells. I would have done nutritionally for that dog, unless it was, to the point where you have to sort of like say, well, maybe we should use something stronger, but there's all sorts of immune manipulation you can do with herbs, and unfortunately, you will not find your Western-trained veterinarians with much, if any, knowledge of this at all. And this is why Dr. Carley at the beginning of the show was so adamant about making sure that people, because it's going to have to come from the consumer, the pet owner, the person themselves are going to have to be proactive in their own health. This is sad because they're not the ones that went through all the schooling to learn about how to do this. But we've had a terrible violation of trust, a terrible loss of integrity, and part of that is due to the fact that our veterinary schools did not train us properly. And for whatever reason, they seem to just assume that marketing through these products, the vaccines supplied for free by the vaccine makers and foods, you know, that this was just the way to go. It was almost like it was too easy for them not to even have to address the situation. Veterinarians with a conscience realize now that there's a lot more to the nutrition story than we ever got. There's a lot more to the immune status, and immunology is not the same as vaccinology. And it is putting the whole profession into a tailspin. Those people that saw this coming, that were realizing we were getting dead ends, that were realizing that Western medicine was not the answer, that we were not getting cures, that we were making them sicker, that we were generating internal medicine cases by the overuse of vaccination, they went out and looked for another way. And the ways that they looked that they have been successful is with homeopathy, traditional Chinese veterinary medicine, herb medicine, chiropractic. I can't say enough about animal chiropractic. And yet in my own state, in North Carolina, the North Carolina Veterinary Medical Board felt it was important for them to finance a sting operation and try to put a very well-trained chiropractic in the next town over out of business because she had the audacity to say that she was going to try and help in her family practice, which treated pets and family members, humans. She was dually trained, completely certified, and she had every right to be doing what she was doing. And yet the North Carolina Veterinary Medical Board, not even understanding how chiropractic works, not having a clue that they were causing hip dysplasia with the overuse of vaccinations, they go and try to take her out of business and put an injunction and drag her into court. See, this is my frustration because I realize now that what we got in allopathic training was probably contra to, I mean, now their diagnostics are good. They got lots of toys and tools, but their methods for trying to treat these are just completely inefficient. They're ineffective, and they're, I just wouldn't even, you can go to the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association website and look into your state for a practitioner. Find out which different modality they work with, and then find out, again, about their level of training. It's not like they just entered into these courses. But call, and if they have a requirement, there's also a very good book out there, What You Need to Know About Vaccinating Your Pets. And I think that would be a good one. I've given that to my clients from my holistic practice and said, if you walk into another veterinary practice that says you have to have a vaccine every year, you tell them to give you the supporting research that says why you do. And when they can't come up with even one paper because there's not out there saying it, then you lay down this book and tell them after they've read this, then they can talk, they'll talk to them. But unfortunately, like I said, you're going to have to call because it is not right that they're not keeping up with the medical knowledge that's available and the scientific research that now see.
And not only that it's not right that they're not keeping up, I mean, now that you've just told me there were other ways to treat my dog 7 years ago that would not have put me at risk as a first-time pregnant woman having, you know, these pesticides, you know, brought into my home, put on my dog on a weekly basis, you know, my frustration level now is, like, through the roof because that, to me, is, you know, just ludicrous that there was another alternative, and I didn't know because I did not know that there was another type of doctor to go to.
Right, but realize also that the veterinarians within the allopathic practices are not only not made aware of this, like Dr. Carley said, she didn't even know what a naturopath was. She didn't even know what a chiropractic, you know, you're almost taught in Western medicine to fear these kind of people. They use them names like voodoo, you know.
Like
and really,
wet.
in reality, the chiropractic, anyone with a spinal cord should be going there as their main doctor. And I had to go through the course and pay. I mean, you know, that course was like $10,000, and it was a lot of travel and training. So on the veterinarian side, I have to say, most of them are just purely ignorant. They weren't given access to this information. And the ones that, you know, like that book that Dr. Carley states is called The Medical Mafia, you know, until you're even, they actually tried to, you know, put homeopaths out of business because you can get cures with that. I've seen cures with homeopathy where I have never seen cures. I've only seen palliation, you know, with Western medicine. You know, surgeries can help things. I mean, you can't put a leg back on with, you know, the waving of a remedy, but you can do that surgically. But there's a place for those cases. There is just not a place for what we have as the rampant, what I consider black medicine.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and let another caller come in, but I just wanted to thank
Donna,
you both
Donna, if I could
for...
just comment on what you said,
sure.
because I just want to underline
yes.
it. Donna's mm-hmm. one of my clients. She's also got two vaccine-damaged children. What this woman has mm-hmm. been through is unbelievable. But she had told me about what this vet did, and I just want to underline that not only was the Bordetella not necessary because she doesn't board the pet, but when she started questioning the vet is when the vet mentioned the fact that titers could be drawn. Now, isn't it true, Donna, that that was never told to you before you even asked the question?
Never. I only asked the question because I knew to ask it from listening to the program. Otherwise, no,
right.
I've never been told that. And every year she had a reaction to whatever they gave her at those vaccine visits.
It's just amazing to me.
Right. And
well,
the other thing, I've seen this in practice, and this really makes my stomach churn. I would say that less than 2% of any of the adverse reactions to vaccines are ever reported. I see them every day. I see people being given the advice to get Benadryl before they get. I mean, there is a plethora of information out there on why they don't need the vaccines, and yet they're not only endangering the animal's life by giving this and then trying to say, okay, now take all these pharmaceuticals to help you through the adverse reaction you're definitely going to have. And
yeah, they
do that too many times in the animal
with
cancer.
I'm sorry, but I was going to say they pumped her with steroids and then, of course, the Benadryl whenever she had a reaction. So it was like I always ended up having to go back like the same night in an emergency situation, and she would get a steroid shot. And I mean, this happened every year, and I was just too, you know, I just didn't know what was going on. You know, now it's like my eyes have been open. But that's
right.
Now
you
know.
Besides your eyes being open, this is what I want to say. I am ashamed of my profession. I am ashamed of any doctor that continues to do that. And when they do that, there is no getting around the fact that what they are doing is malpractice, and they're using malpractice as their standard of care.
Yes. And also I just want to mention in regards to the prednisone shuts down the immune system. So the idea that you would be giving prednisone either before or after you give a vaccine is totally insane anyways, because that's
right.
going to shut down the immune system. And as I describe in the paper on my website, my response to the CDC, where I quote from Harrison's Principles of Internal Medicine, where they actually state that rarely is prevention of infection per se considered to be an important goal of vaccination. In fact, asymptomatic infection can serve to enhance and prolong the immune response. So they're admitting that they're giving your pet or your child the infection. They're not doing anything to boost their immunity. They're actually giving them the chronic infection. And when you give prednisone, you're shutting down the immune response. So basically, you're just loading them up with germs, and the immune system is totally, put at a standstill.
No, it's nothing but malpractice, is what I say. And when I was in Switzerland doing one of my externships at the University of Bern at the veterinary school there, and the Swiss vets made a joke about the French vets, saying if they didn't know how to treat it with antibiotics or steroids, they wouldn't know what to do. And I was very young at the time, but I turned around and looked at the resident that was over me, and I said, there's a lot more than the French vets that practice that way. And that's what you'll see with allopathic medicine.
Yes, that's
so
all they do.
Step outside that box, right?
Well,
find out what
you,
real healing is about.
Thank you both for, fighting the good fight and being pioneers in this, and I really hope that you're able to touch a lot of people with your program tonight, and I'm going to certainly continue spreading the word in my own little circle of friends and family. And Dr.
Yes,
Farley, I appreciate
do what
all the
you
work
can.
You
there's a lovely video. It's at www.drdomore.com. Dr. Margot Roman has initiated the she wants to try very hard to get it to be nationally seen. I have veterinarian friends all over the world that believe everybody who owns a pet should have access. There's an 18-minute video that goes over what many well-trained veterinarians who then found no cures and no happiness working with the allopathic medicine that went into the direction of different types of natural healing, and they have them together on an 18-minute video describing, you know, pretty much the state of affairs. That group of people with the Dr. Dumour have collected over 600 hours now of videos. I was up not too long ago where they were videotaping a veterinarian even from Sierra Leone. I mean, they're going everywhere. and getting out that this is not just the United States. It's worse in the States, I think, because we have such an intensive vaccination program. But and where you have the more intensive vaccine programs, you see the most sickest people and pets. But it has a group of wonderful people who with open hearts who are trying to fix the situation and now realizing it. They didn't get any help from the schools they started out in, believe me. But now they are finding a way to try to, you know, make there an option on the type of way that we try to, you know, get to healing. And the Dr. Dumore Project is hoping in the future to have these healthy pet series available either on public television or, I mean, if nothing else, to the Internet, and where they can go over each of the modalities that tells you more intensively how they're done, who's trained in it, how they get training, how you can find somebody locally that does it, and about cases, success cases, and, you know, how it works. And we got Margot to go with Simone, the producer, to China. Simone, who does this, is a documentarian, and she's done many other works, and it's very good. So that's free. Go to drdumore.com and at least, you know, visualize what the future holds. And then as a consumer, advocate for it and don't settle for anything less.
I will.
And one thing I would like to add is to possibly have your pediatrician look at it as well and ask the pediatrician, since animals are used in research before they give, you know, human drugs to humans, they're giving them to the pets. So why wouldn't this also pertain to humans as well? Because unfortunately, there's no medical doctors that are doing anything like this, although we're trying to start that up with shows like this.
Yeah, it is the Christine from the main group that had all of the posters made about asking about adverse vaccine reactions. Unfortunately, all of those pets who show up on all of those posters are true poster children of the effects of vaccine reactions, and a lot of them have died. A lot of them have had cancer. And anyway, she had, her and I emailed back and forth and trade information, and there was a child that was almost killed. They were wanting to do a bone marrow transplant, couldn't figure out what was wrong. And it turned out, after I'd sent her an email about the use of squalene in the vaccines, that that's what had induced that child's whole condition. And she said to me, you know, here she is fighting for the right for full disclosure and informed consent for pet owners, and people didn't have the same right for their children.
Exactly.
And it's a crime, because children come in fur coats and not.
As a matter of fact, no vaccine for children has ever been tested to see if it causes cancer. I'm sure that's also true for pets.
Right. Yes, no, none of them have. I looked into these MSDS sheets that I was telling you about. If you want to really get technical, if you are required to, they say, no, you have to have this vaccine. Unfortunately, a lot of the front office help is the one that's, you know, sort of stuffing this in the client's faces. I think it's perfectly fine for a well-trained veterinarian to charge twice as much on their exam and not require any veterinarian-induced vaccine diseases and handle it that way rather than just automatically think that the client's not going to come in unless they get this cancer injection. But you can go in there and ask them, before you inoculate my pet, I want to see the MSDS sheet on there. I want to see what's in that, and I want to see what it's caused. And you will see on there's a section for it, carcinogenic. If there's no studies, you tell them thank you, but I'm passing. And there is a study, the 7-year challenge study is out there being done for rabies. Dr. Gene Dodds in California, they're taking donations to get that, because again, you're not going to see the vaccine company sponsoring this research. Unfortunate, but it's true. I ask my clients when I quit vaccinating every year, send that $15 we would have paid for the vaccine to her so that she can collect more money and get this study done. Because once we prove that the rabies titers are good for, you know, 7-10 years, then hopefully we can get the vaccines administered to the pets that are required by law down to maybe one in their lifetime.
Yes, the laws will have to be changed. And unfortunately, the people that are making the laws are getting handouts from the pharmaceutical companies making the vaccines. So that's another level to the problem. But despite all these different layers to the onion, the bottom line is it's our responsibility as parents and pet owners to watch over our loved ones. And we're the ones that are supposed to ask the hard questions. But I'm sure it's also true, well, I know it is, because I've been to very intimidating veterinarians as well. As a matter of fact, the veterinarian I was going to in Florida, even though this clinic had one holistic veterinarian and one allopathic veterinarian, when you walked in the door, they had a big sign there that said, we don't treat unvaccinated pets. Now, in actual fact, they do, but you had to kind of know that through the grapevine, because if you just walked in there and saw the sign, you just submit to the vaccine.
Right. There's the past editor for the AHVMA journal, and we said, we know that all these veterinarians who have been doing titers for the last 15 years, why can't we just go to the companies that have been doing the titers and actually show what low percentage, if any, even ever had to have another vaccine? You know, you have some of them that are non-responders, but anyway, we were trying to get this study done, and we were trying to think how it was going to be done, and her comment to me was that at one of her first positions offering, she wanted to do holistic work. They said, okay, well, you have to vaccinate everybody for the next 5 years, because we need a new wing on our hospital. And she left.
Wow.
She went right out the door and wouldn't work for them. But that's pretty much, folks, what it's coming down to. Because if you think that lepto vaccine...
Go ahead, keep going. I think our caller called up. Keep
if you
going.
Think that the lepto vaccination is going to work more than 4 months, you know, what are you getting it for? So,
if I could just comment on what you said about the non-responder, because this is something that comes up in people all the time as well. You know, if they're not responding, why are they not responding? There's only two reasons. Either the vaccine is defective and maybe it's sterile water and it was mislabeled, or the animal or child's immune system is already so devastated that it can't even mount an immune response. And this happens all the time where if titers are done in children and they find out that they don't have any antibody levels, what do? They shoot them up again.
I don't know what's been done in the human side, but Dr. Schultz addressed this specifically, and he did this at the 2003 HVMA conference, of which I have both tapes, CD, and had my technician put into notes about it. But he said there are some that are out there that are non-responders, and when challenged, they still are able to mount an immune response. So for whatever reason, they don't show up on an endpoint titer as being what he considers significant. He said there is no way to get a response by using more vaccines, so he says don't do it. You know, so with that one, those cases are so few, but when they're out there, then you have the choice to decide what you want to do. I personally would go like what you suggest with the colostrum and building up their immune system. And most of these animals, it's not like they're out roaming the streets for a hot street virus anyway. So they're not going to be, you know, one that you're going to have to be truly concerned about. I guess if you shipped the animal all over the world and was under a lot of stress because he was, you know, showing, you might have a different scenario. I don't know. But those cases are so few and far between that I wouldn't even consider them, an issue.
Hi, Dr. Carley, Dr. Jordan.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Hello. Hi, I have a question.
Okay.
Last year, my son was attacked by dogs, and I was wondering if vaccines have anything to do, I know that it creates diseases in dogs and animals, but could it have anything to do with a dog's temperament? I understand that a dog, you know, is instinctively aggressive by nature, and this was completely unprovoked. It's not the first case after speaking with other people who have been, you know, attacked or bitten by dogs. I was just wondering, do vaccines have anything to do with, you know, a dog all of a sudden just deciding it's going to attack another human being if it's completely unprovoked?
Yes. I think I would say most certainly. And this is something that a lot of veterinarians refuse to even consider, don't even allow it into their radar. But the people who have done a lot of work with this, it's under the case of vaccinosis and the rabies miasm and homeopathy. The chronic form of rabies, okay, you have two forms. You have the dumb paralytic form, and you have the phobic form where they get very vicious and out of character. And if you look at what the chronic form of rabies is, and injecting these dogs over time with rabies, it's setting up chronic disease. One of them can certainly be temperament issues. Another one can certainly be seizures. And they're even on the Veterinary Information Network. They're finding, this isn't to do with temperament, but I've seen a lot of this recently in dogs, the splitting down of their nails. Their nails are just like becoming corrupt from vasculitis, and it's always following rabies vaccination. So, yes, I'd say that temperament is definitely affected by the overuse of the rabies vaccines, which is one of the reasons why we have to get the 7-year study done. Now, there's a book out there by Harris Coulter that talks about the effects of over-vaccination on people. And I told Dr. Carley, you can take that whole back chapter where he is just blessing up and down the medical profession for not realizing this as being related to vaccinations. And you can trade the word medical doctor for veterinarian, and it would still hold true. Also, you can look under the Dr. Pitcairn's work on what a new look at the vaccine question, and he goes through what the chronic forms of distemper and rabies would be in the dog and cat, and you'll be very surprised, but maybe not so much. It's what we see on a daily basis. I mean, what did they think they were doing?
Is that available on the Internet, Dr. Jordan?
Yes, it is. I've sent it to you a couple of times.
Yes, I know you have, but I know what this listener is doing because of what happened to her child. Her child's also one of my clients, and if you could just please tell her, because I'm sure other listeners would like to know, how can they access Dr. Pitcairn's excellent paper?
Okay, if I know it's on Shirley's Wellness Cafe that gives a lot of information about vaccinosis, but you can also particularly find it directly through, you know, that same article is on the site that is about the vaccine. Let me see, where you can get the bumper stickers about just vaccines, Rethink It. Rethink Vaccines, is that what it's called, Dr. Carley?
I think so. And his name is spelled, well, you could also always put him into Google. And
yes.
If you could spell his last name, isn't it Pitcairn?
Yes, correct.
So
Pitcairn?
Yes. He has a wonderful book out about the natural care of dogs and cats as well. It's very good.
Okay.
And
you know, when this happened to my son, I did a little bit of research, and I was shocked, me as a layperson, that I could kind of, you know, put two and two together and not, you know, for others, you know, professionals to realize this. But dog bites are on the rise, and they're not. It's not going down. It's going up. You know, 4.7 million people are bitten a year. And the other things that are going up is the amount of vaccinations that are given to animals, to dogs in particular. And I looked at these two things and I said, what an interesting, you know, correlation. It's incredible that one is going up and so are dog bites. And
okay,
I don't know.
Tell me, why are the veterinarians not seeing this? Why? Because they don't even have it in their radar. And because the people who stand to give them most of the information that they read about is conflicted with, because they're the marketers of the very thing that's causing the problem. The book out is called Vaccine Guide for Dogs and Cats, What Every Pet Lover Should Know, is by Catherine J. M. Doty. That is available on Amazon.com. And let me see if I can find Dr. Pitcairn's article. Dr. Pitcairn has the professional course site that gives you a lot of information, and that is, let me see, I don't have that one right here. God, there's, you know, like you said, it's just an understatement about that there's enough research out there to choke a horse.
While you're looking for that, I just want to give the name of Harris Coulter's book, because this is one of the most important books that any of you could have in your vaccine library. The title is Vaccination, Social Violence, and Criminality by Harris Coulter. And the only place I know where you can access that book is on thinktwice.com.
Thinktwice has Dr. Pitcairn's article.
Thinktwice
is about the vaccine.
Yeah, that's one of the best sites.
It's one
of the best sites any of you can go to get the truth about what inoculations are really doing, such as causing sudden infant death syndrome, et cetera, et cetera. And I just want to say, it's so amazing to me that they continue to call these things a coincidence. Just like the autism rise in children, it's just a coincidence that the vaccine schedule is increasing and the autism rise is occurring at the same time. just like our caller stated. It's just a coincidence that the dog bites are rising while the rate of vaccines are increasing. This is a self-evident fact. And part of the scientific method is observation. And that's the one thing that these scientists, these mad scientists, they've created statistics to twist and spin the data so that they can ignore all of these self-evident facts. And that's why people have to start trusting their own common sense and their intuition. You know, when they're going into these doctor's offices, be it a veterinarian or a white coat, and asking questions, and the doctor's just poo-pooing these things. You have to do your own research. You have to look for the truth. It is out there.
Yeah, you have to leave a doctor that won't, that doesn't consider those. I mean, if they you know, I've gone, like I said, all over the United States when I went looking for a job to work for one. And, I mean, I went into way too many that looked me in the eye and told me, look, I run a $2 million a year vaccine-based practice, and I'm afraid they're going to take that away from me. I mean, they have done this to themselves by stepping out of being a doctor and being worried about health and instead having cattle call practices that just ran them in there and shot them up. And I mean shot them up, because there's over 100 different vaccinations out there for pets, 26 different agents that they're vaccinating against. And believe me, the average dogs don't come into contact, well, you know, with any of those problems. They do like to say, well, until we vaccinate it, we saw parvo and distemper. I said, I'm sure that's true, but no one ever told you, and you won't find any work to suggest that they have to be vaccinated every year, and especially with these what I consider dirty vaccines, and that's not what got rid of the problem doing that. And you've just traded it for a bigger problem. Now you have internal medicine cases. Now you have autoimmune disease. Now you have allergies. Now you have endocrine diseases. Now you have a complete breakdown of their skeletal and structural systems because of the autoantibodies produced. The Purdue study showed that. They didn't take that study out very long because everyone knows what's going to happen. You know, every year they get this. Every year they get these autoantibodies produced. And then we have to step back and wonder why we have so many ACL injuries. And that's now the number one surgery done, even over spays and neuters anymore, because they are making antibodies to their myelin sheaths, to their collagen, and, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to make the correlation. Are those studies going to be done by the vaccine companies to make the vaccines? Are you crazy?
Right.
Well, one of the things that I found when I did, you know, my research is that although vets pretty much across the board don't, you know, say anything bad about vaccinations, they all do agree, it seems, that there isn't enough studies out there, or none at all, you know, about what really is effective and good. They do agree that there's nothing out there. Here they are doing it, but they do agree that there's nothing out there that says if this stuff is actually good, if they do have to repeat vaccinations as often as they do. They know themselves that they have no support data.
Right.
So it's interesting to me that they're doing it anyway. These are the professionals that you go to, and that you're in, you know, entrust their care to, and they themselves know that they don't have the information, yet they do it anyway. And you're saying this is malpractice, and to me this sounds criminal, because you're not allowed to abuse an animal. You're not allowed to abuse a dog. You can actually have criminal charges against you for that. And I think that they should, you know, suffer the same consequences, because they're doing something that they know they shouldn't be doing because they have no support data, yet they're doing it anyway. And animals are dying. Animals are biting, you know, children, all people, but 60% of the victims are children. So it's really disturbing to me because my child was affected and others also are. And I just, you know, it really angered me. I love dogs. I love them. I think they're wonderful companions. You know, dog spelled backwards is God. That's why they're man's best friend. But and it's horrible what we are doing to them. Absolutely
but
horrible.
But the good news is that there are veterinarians doing something about it. And I encourage you to go to my website and read Dr. Rogers' letter to the Texas State Attorney General, because that's basically what he's saying, is these veterinarians are committing a crime. And I just want to also mention one other thing. Just to show people how outrageous it is, because people may not be aware, they're even inoculating ferrets now. I have a dog and two cats, and it makes me sick to my stomach when I go to the pet store to buy certain, you know, things that I need. I don't buy my dog food at the pet store, but different things that I buy for my pets, toys and such. And you see that they're having vaccination clinics for ferrets. And what is a ferret doing? He's in his cage. He's running around the wheel. He may get out occasionally to crawl on his owner's hand. Why would a ferret need a vaccination?
Well, because we have all of that adrenal cancer now to take care of. You know,
well,
I've seen adrenal gland cancer in ferrets. Now, where do you think they had that from?
From the vaccines. That's my whole point, yes.
Right, exactly. So people need to wake up. They need to see what's going on. They need to call their veterinarian on it. You know,
yes.
Veterinarian's way of trying to handle this, veterinary state boards will try to put a chiropractor out of business, setting up sting operations. I've had things done to me to try to make claims, you know, against me and just make it so difficult for me to be able to practice. And because I'm not part of the good old boys club, and I'll die not part of the good old boys club, but there's nothing good about that club.
Amen
and,
to that. And I just,
I
have to comment on that, though. That's so important what you just said, because people have to search out the health care providers who are proving that they care more about their clients than they do about the Mercedes in their driveway or getting into the old boys club or staying there. We need the support of the people. We need the support of the people. We need the people to help us get the word out, because once we reach critical mass, there will be evolution of consciousness. These things will stop. I don't know when it's going to happen, and I don't know how it's going to go down, but it's getting too obvious right now. As a matter of fact, I just want to take a minute just to read you something from the physician's desk reference. I have a client who has multiple sclerosis, and he's on the drug Copaxone. And so I happened to look up in the 2007 PDR, I'm reading about Copaxone, because I can assure you that your white coats do not read this book. They go to the dosage section. They find out what is the drug given for, and they go to the dosage section. They do not read about the side effects. They do not read about the clinical pharmacology, blah, blah, blah. I just want to read what I found. I almost fell off my chair when I read this last night about Copaxone. And this is what it says. The mechanism by which this particular drug, they give the long name, affects patients with multiple sclerosis is not fully elucidated. However, it is thought to act by modifying immune processes that are currently believed to be responsible for the pathogenesis, which means cause of MS. The hypothesis is supported by findings of studies that have been carried out to explore the pathogenesis of experimental allergic encephalomyelitis, which is the same thing that's causing autism and all these other things. It's just that it happens in a different part of the brain. The way that they experimentally produce this in animals is that they immunize the animals against central nervous system-derived material containing myelin. In other words, they're giving the animal an injection of myelin. They're inoculating them with myelin. Now, the measles virus is very similar in structure to myelin. And so if you have an antibody produced against the measles virus, it's going to cross-react with the myelin and attack the myelin. But it always amazes me when I read things like this, is because, of course, they're not going to tell you that in the physician's desk reference, but I bet they're probably immunizing them with measles virus. Or they could be inoculating them with myelin. And if you have a tissue culture that's being used to grow the virus to produce the vaccine, such as from an aborted fetus, and it's got myelin in it, that myelin protein is going to be in your inoculation. You're going to inject it into you, and you're going to get the same situation. So the truth is buried within these books, and it's amazing how I oftentimes find these little tidbits. And this is what people have to, you know, realize. Their doctors aren't reading these books. One of my favorite things to do when I teach my clients what I would do if I was they in terms of how to reverse their diseases, when they're on a bunch of drugs, I spend hours poring through the physician's desk reference, and I pick out the symptoms that my client is having that's listed as a side effect with these drugs. And it never fails that almost every symptom that they're having is also caused by the drug. So, of course, if you're taking the drug, the symptom's not going to possibly get better. It may get a little better for some time, but then as you keep on taking the drug and it builds up in your body, you're going to develop the side effect. And what are they going to do? They're going to increase the drug, or they're going to add another drug to the cocktail. And that's what they do. So people have to realize this.
Dr. Pitcairn, when I was taking his professional homeopathy course, I mean, to me, I think he's one of the best veterinarians, one of the wisest men, and one of the most on cue about what's happening in this world and with the health situation or lack of. But he told us the same thing. He said, go to the PDR when a, you know, because it's difficult working up chronic cases in homeopathy because they're so cluttered with these other issues going on from the toxicosis of the medicines they've been on. But I have found that when I go to the PDR and look up the drug that the animal's on, 98% of his clinical problems are related to the, you know, the drug that they're on, or, as I found out through Dr. Merkel's site, what the vaccine could have been inducing. And once you clear up that, it's essentially allopathic medicine. Once you stop that and you give them a good nutritional program, most of their problems go away. And if they can just be rescued before they've been completely damaged and transmutated on their DNA from the overuse of the vaccines, then you have a chance.
And that's a very important point that you're bringing up, Dr. Jordan, because, of course, what are they doing now? They have articles in the paper almost every day. They found a gene for this, and they found a gene for that. And obviously that means that they're finding mutated genes associated with certain diseases. Now, what the scientific community wants you to believe is that that mutated gene is your fault, that either you inherited it from your parent or else, you know, it mutated in you. Why is it mutated? And I hope you heard what Dr. Jordan just said, because they're mutating because of all the things that they're doing to us, especially the inoculations, because plasmids of DNA, which are just circular rings of DNA material, can actually inject themselves into your very genetic structure. And this is what's causing all the genetic mutations. And they're coming up with all kinds of, you know, science fiction type answers to these things, all the things that they're going to do to help people that have these mutated genes. What they need to do is stop inoculating people with disease. That's going to prevent most of it. Of course, radiation and other things are also involved, and I want to make it clear, although I always talk about inoculations causing all autoimmune diseases and cancer, it's always the big picture. Like Dr. Jordan said, it's the food, it's the nutrition, it's what you take into yourself. It's the toxins you're exposed to, the electromagnetic radiation, the x-rays, the fluoride. I mean, you could go on for days just listing the toxins that these alphabet agencies are letting us be exposed to that are killing us. But the good news is that if you stop doing those things, if you learn what's bad for you, and you're not going to learn it from your white coat, because I can assure you, just like she said in veterinary school, she didn't learn anything about nutrition and all these things. When I was in medical school, we had 10 hours of nutrition and 2 years of pharmacology. And the nutrition involved 4 hours talking about milk. I still have all these notes. And 4 hours talking about the four basic food groups. And 2 hours telling us that vitamins give you expensive urine. That was basically the essence of my medical school education on nutrition. And along those lines, I just want to mention something very important that I had learned by talking to you and Dr. Roman about milk. And that is the fact that at least 89% of milk is known to have the bovine leukemia virus in it. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, and Margot believes that's where the leukemia came from. And the reason that they won't test for it is because it's probably found in everything, including organic milk, and that there's no way for them to get it out.
And I hope all you milk drinkers are listening to that one, because if that doesn't give you the chills, I don't know what will. Because, of course, all of us are connected, and these viruses have the ability to mutate. And even the modified live viruses that are put into vaccinations, once they get into your body, and especially if your body is toxic, these organisms have the ability to transform even into other organisms. So it doesn't matter if it's modified live, and even if it's killed, the virus. I don't think there's anybody there checking every single vaccine dose to make sure there's no live viruses in there, although I am aware they load it up with formaldehyde also, to make sure they're pickled, these viruses. And, of course, formaldehyde is a carcinogen. But I hope you're getting the picture, folks, and listening to us talk. It's the same thing for pets as it is for people. And this, if there's anything that we have a right to, when they say we have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, if you don't have your life, you can't pursue happiness, and you can't make sure that you maintain your liberty. And life is not just breathing. Life is having the ability to be healthy enough to enjoy your life, to be productive, to be able to go out there and do your mission in the world, whatever your mission may be. We have so many disabled people now in this country, and it's really disgusting to me how they actually get locked into the system. Once they become disabled, then, of course, they have to count on the government to provide them with their benefits, and, of course, to maintain their benefits, they have to jump through certain hoops. And with, you know, the children, it's always you have to get your inoculations. That's always one of the main things they force the parents who get benefits of any kind to do. You must get your inoculations. So people have to ask themselves, are you going to sacrifice your children? Are you going to sacrifice your pets? Are you going to be let them be used as experimental guinea pigs? Because just like Dr. Jordan said, there's never been any test of any length of time on these vaccinations, and certainly they've never proved that they've been good, even in the tests that they've done.
Right, and the USDA is, I just read something on the Muriel sheet that said that the USDA is rethinking the labeling on them. They only required the companies to say they would last a year. That's not what they lasted. That's just the requirement that the USDA had. I think a lot of people now, hindsight's 2020. We can see where there's been terrible, terrible, I don't know how to say it except for that we've let the public down. And one of the things is just not being thoughtful enough to think that what we were doing, the medical procedure that we tend to do every day at a veterinary hospital, is the most dangerous, and yet it is the least thought about, the least understood, the least researched, and the least connected to all of the adverse effects. And the adverse effects, they don't just happen within 72 hours. What homeopathy taught me was that these things can show up 2 months, 2 years later. And with all of these cancers showing up in animals either at the injection site or downstream on an acupuncture point from the injection site, this is cancer that's being brought on by vaccinations.
And I'm going to go up to the conspiracy level, and you don't have to comment on this, but this is what I know, is that there's a very big push, especially with people, to decrease the population. And I would encourage all of you, if you have not yet seen it, to get the movie V for Vendetta, because as it turns out, there's a lot of truth in the movies. I would actually state that there's more truth in the movies than there is on the evening news. But in the movie V for Vendetta, you will actually see where there's a scientist at the end of the movie, it's very powerful, where she talks about how she was actually hired to do tests on humans. They wanted to find an effective way to kill people so that the people would be killed without destroying their property. In other words, you could bring in some wicked virus and it could knock out, you know, a whole country. And then the people that were, you know, promoting this biological warfare could just walk in and take over the country, you know, just spray it with colloidal silver or something, I don't know, clean up the mess, and they would still have all the goods left over. And it shows in this movie how the scientist is actually experimenting on human beings, and in her mind, she's thinking that these people are performing a service to their country. She's murdering them. She's giving them these injections of viruses that are eventually killing them with the purpose of developing a very virulent virus that's going to be used for biological warfare. And I am sure that there's all kinds of things going on in terms of this kind of situation. We hear every day, although they've been a little quiet over the last month or so, but there was a time for the last 6 months where every day in the paper, especially when I lived in Florida, there would be articles about the bird flu, the bird flu, the bird flu is coming. It's not a matter of if, but when. Now, the bird flu vaccine has been licensed, and if you go to my website, near the bottom of the homepage, there's many links to different MSNBC articles talking about how the bird flu vaccine is has been licensed. The scientists are actually taking bets. They've created some kind of a bond fund where they're betting on when it's going to occur. So you see, they know it's going to occur because it's going to happen from the bird flu vaccine. And on that note, I just want to mention another one of the most important books in my vaccine library. I don't know if you have this one, Dr. Jordan. It's very hard to find, but I got mine off eBay. It's called Vaccination, the Silent Killer, A Clear and Present Danger by Ida Onaroff and Eleanor McBean. And in this book, they actually talk about how the Spanish flu epidemic in 1918 was caused by inoculations given to the soldiers in World War I. So although they're comparing the potential bird flu pandemic to the Spanish flu epidemic, this book documents that the Spanish flu epidemic, it wasn't Spanish flu at all. It was an inoculation-caused epidemic that the soldiers brought home, and because the soldiers were coming home sick, they twisted the arm of the American public and made them think it was their patriotic duty to go out and get these vaccinations, and that's what caused this epidemic. And the same thing happened all over the world, except for in a couple countries where they didn't give the vaccine, and there was not a pandemic in those countries. So it's very important.
Is that not similar to the swine flu? Isn't that similar to when President Ford was going to mandate the swine flu vaccine and what happened with that?
Yes, and I'm so glad you mentioned that because in this book as well, on page 94, the authors talk about how one of them, Ida Onaroff, and another individual actually brought a lawsuit against the federal government to stop the swine flu vaccine in the 1970s, and their lawsuit was dismissed, and they were told they didn't have standing. And I'm quoting from the book, when asked how we could get standing, we were told that, and I quote, if you took a shot and dropped dead, that would give you standing. This is how insane it is, folks. You have to understand. I know that they know exactly what they're doing. They are decreasing the population. They are causing all kinds of disease because this is how the pharmaceutical cartels make all their money, by making all their drugs that then possibly will suppress some of the symptoms, but in most cases, as Dr. Jordan has agreed with me, actually cause side effects that make things worse. So this is a matter of life or death. You have to check these things out. You know, you don't even have to believe us. Check things out for yourself. The information is out there, but you're not going to hear it from your white coat.
Right. And let me give them some more information so they can do some research on the Internet. Kathleen O'Driscoll is one of my favorite authors. She wrote Shock to the System. And her previous work just escapes me right away. But she has a website. She's in the UK. She's a homeopath. And I've made this comment to several of my veterinary friends that it's a shame that some of the best information is out there, one by a UK homeopath and the other one from an Australian homeopath, about the real situation that exists. I guess it's easier to be outside the country and looking in and seeing what's happening than to be amongst it and not recognize it in front of your face. But she has the, it's called Canine Health Concern. And if you just go to that, she has an article called Pet Vaccination, an Industrialized Crime. There's also the Vaccine Disease Racket that's online. It's very good. A Shock to the System and Too Many Shots for Spot. This is a layperson's book. But, you know, I guess that's where my frustration lies, is that you take a Hippocratic Oath, and if you look at those words and you see what's being done in most of the practices, they're not running on a parallel path. And it's got to change, and it's not going to change unless the consumer says, no, I'm not buying this. And Dr. Blake says in the video he doesn't want natural medicine or holistic medicine to be an 11th-hour rescue attempt.
Exactly. Well, sadly, what we need to do to bring health back to this world is to put the white coats out of business, basically. I mean, like you said, there are times when surgery is necessary, especially if you have trauma. But I am just as disgusted with my profession as you are with yours. It's all the same thing. They've become hypocrites. Not only are they not healing, you know, first do no harm. It would be better to do nothing than to go in and actually cause problems to the degree that they are. It's evil. Yeah. There's no other word for it because I am convinced that most of them know very well. If they're not aware of the facts as we're discussing them, they certainly have to start realizing that they're causing a problem, especially in the pets, because one of the things that Dr. Jordan is doing is she's documenting the cancers that are occurring at the injection sites of the vaccines. Now, how can they possibly not see this? You can't be the only veterinarian that's noticing this.
When I tell them when the biopsies come back and it's injection by a foreign material, This is a very important point. There are pathologists all over this country that have generated huge registrars of cancer. Do you know what you'll see on there if they're male or if they're female? What you never see on there is how many of these animals, which I'm sure it's all of them, have, well, there are some cancers, like maybe transmissible venereal tumor or something, but the majority of them are vaccinated, over-vaccinated, and vaccinated with toxins, and you never see that as a sideline, nor what they were fed. So if you go back and do a retrospective study, I asked one doctor about that. He said, well, that's because they assume they're all vaccinated every year. Now, when I tried to trace back, why did that even start to vaccinate every year? Because they just, you know, sort of told you that, you know, you could pick up the torch and continue to carry it. It came out of absolutely no scientific studies, no research. It came out of roundtable discussions from the American Veterinary Medical Association. And whether it happened in 1978 or 1989, I've seen different variations on when it actually started. There was no scientific reason for this to start. And it's something like you hear on Paul Harvey. It just started because somebody said so. And that is just not, I mean, we wear white coats. We have degrees. We've spent a lot of money. We charge a lot of money. Where in the hell is the justification in that? If we can't even, you know, pass off the basics for nutrition, which is the foundation of health, and the, you know, preventing them from getting sicker from what we're injecting. It's job security for the veterinarian. It's the generation of internal medicine diseases. But it is
exactly
not what that Hippocratic Oath says that we're supposed to be doing.
Right, and when you take it to the next level in terms of the legislation, I mean, what I see happening, especially with the people, I'm getting all kinds of emails now about this new human papillomavirus vaccine. So far as I know, there's been at least 3 deaths reported. There's young girls that are getting Guillain-Barré syndrome that are actually passing out right after they get the vaccine. And the doctors that give the vaccine will actually assume that, oh, they're just, you know, a little queasy because of the needle and things like this. It's unbelievable.
Couldn't possibly be what we're doing, right?
Right.
Couldn't
but
possibly
of course,
be from the doctor.
It's almost like if they can do it, if they can find a way to make a vaccine for something, they'll make a vaccine for something. And then the next thing you know, once the vaccine is available, then somebody's going to go to a legislator and say, we have to legislate this vaccine. I could spend an hour just listing the vaccines that are being developed or are now available. They're developing vaccines to inoculate you with cocaine, nicotine, everything you can imagine. They're going to start inoculating people with things that they become addicted to allegedly prevent addiction. I mean, you know, it's totally insane. And it's not going to stop until the people demand that it stop, until the people start asking questions, until the people stop going to these white coats. If you're going to a doctor that doesn't spend time with you, who doesn't answer your questions, who treats you like a dummy and basically stands up there with a white coat with a stethoscope around their neck and say, well, this is, you know, what I've been trained to do, and this is how medicine works, and doesn't even consider that you might have a valid point. Don't go to that person. Keep on looking.
And you left out a very important, there's also a very important, dangerous person you left out, and that's the person who looks you directly into the eye as your friend and says they still need it.
Yes. Well, those are the evil people. And on that note, I have to just mention, and it's mentioned at the bottom of my Hippocratic Oath, which is on my website, which I wrote after I realized that AIDS was created in this country. I went to my own medical doctor. I used to go for the yearly physical and the blood tests and all that garbage. Haven't been for about 10 years. I've never been healthier in my life. But when I went to this doctor with the documents to prove that, he actually looked me in the eye and said, what do I care? I have a Mercedes in my driveway. And that's what you have to realize, folks, that the people, you know, it's like she said, you go to school. I spent 17 years after high school to get my education and medical school and residency and the whole ball of wax, and you pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, blah, blah, blah. But if you find out that you're doing the exact opposite than that which you went into the profession for, that's when you've reached the fork in the road. And either you have to stand up for the truth or go out of the profession altogether. I actually do know of medical doctors who are opening up florist shops and things like that. The ones with a conscience that just can't
right.
stand to do it anymore, rather than be persecuted and go through some of the things that we've gone through, that's better than keeping on doing it. But especially, like you said, the ones who will look you in the eye. I have one client, and she was on another radio station I was on. I have a testimonial of her on my website, who has a child with autism. And it's a girl, which is unusual. And this mother was very concerned about autism before she got her child inoculated with disease. And the pediatrician assured her it would never happen. And it did happen. And the mother then asked for the doctor to give her a medical exemption from further vaccines because he admitted that it was from the vaccine after this happened. And the doctor not only would not give her a medical exemption because he said that he would, you know, there'd be ramifications for him if he did so, but he told this mother that if she refused to continue to inoculate her child, he would report her to Child Protective Services. Now, if that is not evil, I don't know what is.
Well, now back to what you said about the, at the beginning of the show, where you were saying that the FDA is trying to word any of the natural therapies. I mean, I think of energetic medicine, like in Reiki. There are quite a lot. I follow a lot of these different modalities. I've gone for training in some, not all of them, but I have huge files of people who do not wear white coats, who have cured animals. And there's books out by the woman, Lori Kaplan, who got her dog Bullet over cancer with nutrition. Now, a lot of these are poo-pooed by my counterparts in veterinary medicine, but I would love to write a book, and the title would be True Healers Rarely Wear White Coats. But these people who do Reiki and have helped animals, and people who really have a love bond for their animal and have changed their nutrition and cleaned up the lifestyle that was causing the problem, they are getting cured. And you don't have to have a license to do that. So if the FDA is going to try to somehow skew the rights of the individuals offering these services, saying that you can't do it unless you're a doctor, well, it's just as silly as saying that the veterinary board in North Carolina has any say at all what to say over a chiropractic when they don't even understand what chiropractic is, or the fact that you can do a physical manipulation and cause a change in the phenotypic expression of the genetic code. I mean, who are they guarding? Because they don't understand that. And the people that have training in these other modalities in energetic medicine, they're much more positive healers, and they're much more have the animal's best interest at heart. And I feel like a good man, even with the wrong tools, is going to get a good result, whether over, you know, a bad person with a bad heart, even if they're using the right tools. And so I don't see how they can start to limit our ability to chase down health wherever we find it.
Well, I have to comment on what you said is so important. First of all, yes, intention is the key. If it's their intention to heal, and that is the most important thing, if the doctor cares enough to heal, and I just have to respectfully disagree with you that the North Carolina Veterinary Board doesn't have any clue about chiropractic. I would submit that they know exactly that chiropractic is very good, and that if chiropractors start helping pets, that's going to take away business from the veterinarians. That's what I would. That's what I know in my heart is true. And you ask how they can limit those people. Let me tell you what they're doing in Florida. Reiki practitioners in Florida are now being forced to get a massage license. You see, the license is the limitation. That's how they put you in the box. And just as I read at the beginning of the show, what they're going to do is they're going to say that only licensed medical doctors can suggest any of these other therapies, which, like Dr. Jordan said, they have no clue about. I've gone for training in a lot of these things myself, but I never heard of most of them when I was in medical school. Or if I did, they were all called quackery. So they're going to make only the medical doctors allowed to do these things. And then if the medical doctors do these things, they take away your license. That's the control. That's how they're going to do it, and that's how they are doing it.
Right. There's a veterinarian homeopath I heard of that I believe it was in the state of Florida. He offered to give his license back because he said, you're saying I need a license to prescribe pharmaceuticals and a license to kill an animal. And license to kill through, you know, overuse of vaccinations. He goes, I don't need a license for that. I'm a healer. And that statement was so powerful to me because I thought, if I didn't have to worry about them taking away my license, and I would be able to actually do what I know was going to help that animal and not, you know, even have to, you know, worry about the implication that they could come in because they do have control over your license. So yeah. that's a real concern, because you know, that's the only way they're able to control you. So if you were able to not even have to be under that medical board and still be able to generate health by the proper nutrition and supplementation and, you know, where you needed whatever, homeopath, energy work, whatever needed to be done, chiropractic, it would be a lot better, I think, our health would be better, and we wouldn't have big pharma, and we wouldn't have, you know, groups like the AMA that, you know, could put true healers out of business.
And that's where we're going, and that's how funny it is in my own personal situation. In 2003, the New York State Medical Board took away my license to kill because of a television show that I did, and there's a few radio shows on my website that you can listen to learn about how that went down, the fraudulent New York State Medical Board. They thought that they were going to stop me from doing what I was doing. But it's very funny how it turned out, because when they ordered me to undergo psychiatric drugging, institutionalization, or electroshock therapy because of my delusion of conspiracy, I told them they can keep their license to kill. I'm a teacher now. And I'm still doing the same thing I always did, only I'm teaching people what I would do if I was them. I'm not practicing anything. And as it turns out, in North Carolina, you don't have to have a license to be a homeopathist. So there's still a few little places where the light is still shining. But everybody has their purpose. And what you're doing to enlighten other veterinarians, it's obviously having an effect, because all these emails you're sending me, I am so proud of your profession. See, I'm looking at it a different way. Your profession is doing something. There's many of you. My profession is doing nothing. There's just a few that are talking about what's going on with vaccinations. Dr. McCullough is an example. But you put my name in.
Oh, Dr. McCullough's site. Right. That's a very good site to mention to people, because they have a lot of research on there.
But you put my name into Dr. McCullough's search engine, and you will find that it will come out blank. And that is because Dr. McCullough is afraid. He goes up to a certain level, but he doesn't go up to the highest level. And he has his purpose. I'm not putting him down for what he's doing. He has a right to be afraid, because they will come after him, and they will take away his license if he goes up to my level. But I'm just stating, that's what's going on, folks. Is this the kind of country that you want to live in? I'm not promoting a revolution. I'm promoting an evolution of consciousness. If enough of us stood up and just said no, and the bird flu vaccine, when that comes down, because like they're telling us, it's not a matter of if but when that comes, that's going to be each one of your opportunities. You're going to be at that fork in the road for not just yourself, but your children as well. And you're going to have to decide if you're going to get down on your knees and take that vaccine, because you have no clue how it's going to go down. The vaccine was just licensed. There's been no testing. And, of course, like Dr. Jordan said, no vaccine's ever been proved to be safe or effective to begin with. But this one was just developed. And you're going to let your family be experimented on? I have a big problem with that. Are you still there, Dr. Jordan?
Oh, yeah, I am. So.
Okay.
But and as far as Dr. Joseph Merkulis' site, I have to put in a plug for him, because there's a lot of research that he has put on the website. If you just go in there, and there's a documentary he has on there about vaccines, it's very good to look at. It explains, it's almost an hour long, about all the falsehoods about it. But if you just go in there and look at his listing of what's in the vaccines, all the research that they have on immunizations and all these diseases that they have been shown to cause, and how many of these are animal-based studies, also about the adjuvants, the fillers, the ingredients, all of the connections that it has with internal medicine disease. I think it's, you know, it's a very good, he's a good resource for being able to go on. And plus, he's one of the best visited sites for offering that information. And he has a book out,
definitely.
I think he wrote about the bird flu hoax.
Yes. So. I recommend everybody to go on his website and get on his newsletter. Like I said, he has very good information. It's just that he doesn't go up to the conspiratorial level, because it is a conspiracy. Under Title 50 of the U.S. Code, the Department of Defense can experiment on any American with biological warfare agents, and they can use vaccines to do so. There's lots of documentation that population reduction is a national security issue. So I'm just saying, there's many layers to the onion. But I definitely recommend all the listeners get his go on his website, get his newsletter, and start reading some of this information. And he does have a lot of research to back it up. I'm so busy doing that I don't have time to, you know, do a lot of this research myself. But actually, my work is my research, because eventually I will publish the results of all the thousands of people that I've reversed all their autoimmune diseases and cancers with what I'm doing. And eventually, it's going to come to the point where the medical mafia is not going to be able to say, this is a coincidence. You know, eventually it's going to come to that point, and even if they'll never admit it, the people are going to get it. They're going to realize that the medical doctors do not have their best interest at heart, be it out of fear of doing the right thing, or be it out of just the fact that they want to have, you know, that Mercedes in their driveway, whatever the case may be. Either way, that's not the reason that they should have become doctors. And my profession has been totally trusted.
There's somebody trying to get on, I think. There's somebody trying to get on.
Is there another question? Is there another question?
Yes, Dr. Colley, I'd like you to go, if you could talk a little bit about cardiovascular stents. My mother has to go in, and they schedule her next week to get another stent put in. They did two stents about 6 months ago. I wanted to get your review on that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's a little off topic, but I will say that there has actually been research, and it was even published in the mainstream media, that they found that people that had stents actually had a worse result than people that didn't have stents. Because, and let me describe what a stent is. A stent is basically just, it's kind of like a little straw, I'll just explain it simply, that they put into a coronary artery that's been occluded or it's very much blocked, and they put this stent in the artery so that the blood has a lumen, you know, an opening to flow through. The problem is that that's a foreign body. It also can become encased in cholesterol, because the reason people are getting all this cholesterol in their bloodstream and it's forming plaques in their hearts is because their vessels are being damaged by acidic blood and all kinds of other toxins in them, etc. And also the stents can become dislodged. They can actually get to the point where they kink and they, you know, they turn a little bit, and therefore the blood can't go through. It can actually become a worse of a problem, is my point. It can actually become an obstruction. But along those lines, Dr. Jordan, if you could comment, because I know there's also evidence, especially in animals, that the vaccines are also causing damage to all tissues of the body, correct, including the blood vessels, causing
vasculitis? Right, because of the basic structures of everything, like collagen and myelin would be two of the big ones. The vaccines are causing autoantibodies to be produced, and so they make a reaction against, and it ends up breaking down the very structural tissue that's there to physically support you. So there is a topic coming up soon. Dr. Schultz is going to be around doing a talk, and I wanted to specifically ask him about the cause of the heart problems in King Charles Cavaliers Spaniels, and there's been a linkage from the overuse of vaccination actually causing that, what we call, we consider an inherited disease. Again, they're blaming it on their genes, but it's like, how did it get there? Right. So.
And I just want to mention that this poor man's mother, I bet you she's one of those people, because I know I spoke to him, he called me up the other day, and she's one of these people that her health is continually declining, but yet she believes that the white coats are doing the best they can. And I bet you anything that she's also one of these people that's going to the doctor every year and getting the flu shot and the pneumonia shot. And so all of these things are contributing to the problem, as well as all the different drugs that she's taking. Her body is a toxic cesspool, and having all these different immune malfunctions where her immune system is attacking her, and that's what's happening. And once you start putting foreign bodies into the body, that's another big problem. The body wants to get foreign things out. If you get a sliver in your finger and you don't, you know, get a needle and pull it out, your body will eventually push that out. I was in a car accident where I hit my head on the windshield and the windshield shattered and glass shards went into my forehead. It took years. But over a period of time, and if I'd have known about the homeopathic remedy silica, it would have happened much faster, because that will actually remove foreign bodies. But it took years, but that glass actually came to the surface of my skin, and I was able to pick the glass out of my forehead. So your body does not want metal stents It doesn't want any of these things in it. It will try to push it out. So I hope that answers your question. And actually, on that note, I see that we've almost finished 2 hours on the air. I just want to thank Dr. Jordan so much for being on the show. I know we're having lots of listeners tonight. This show will be archived on BBS Radio, and I hope you'll tell all your friends to listen to it and check it out. And if you have anybody that you go to who tells you that the things that you learned on this show are not true, please do invite them to be a guest on my program. On my website, you'll see I've offered a $10,000 reward to any vaccine promoter to come on this show and prove my documents incorrect. So if they're afraid to do so, then that should be a big red flag to all of you. So I would like to thank you so much, Dr. Jordan. God bless you for what you're doing. I'm so grateful that I found you. I feel like you're my sister in the veterinary community. I love pets as much as I love people. My pets are my children. And I sure wish you were a little closer to me so I could bring you my pets to you, but at least I know some things to do to help them from what I've learned with people. But we must take responsibility, folks. We must do something about what's going on. And once again, I just want to also recommend that you go to the Dr. Dumore site. Is it drdumore.com?
Yes, and there's an 18-and-a-half-minute video. They should watch that video. And they can comment on it, and they can learn how they can help support that, getting that information out on a nationwide basis and into our public television series.
Yes. So thank you again, Dr. Jordan. It was a pleasure to have you on a guest. I hope you'll be on again in the future. And I'll just close
with
saying, wake up, America. Pardon me?
Right. It's all for the pets or for the people.
Yes. And it's up to us to change things, and we can once we get enough people to wake up. So good night, everybody, and have a good day tomorrow. And I hope you're going to call some people and tell them what you learned. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.